For the second part of today's Underreported, we'll hear about what NASA does best, which is studying outer space. NASA's Dawn probe is giving scientists a closer look at two of the most overlooked objects in the solar system, asteroids Vesta and Ceres. And Dr. Thomas Prettyman, a member of the Dawn science team and a planetary scientist at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, joins us along with Dr. Tom McCord, also a member of the Dawn team. He is an asteroid hunter at the Bear Fight Institute in Washington State. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us about this Dawn space probe. What is it?
Well, this is Tom Prettyman, and it's a...
We have two Toms, so I can't say... Wait, we have two Toms here. I can't say Tom. Tell us about this.
Yeah, that's right. You can't.
Yeah.
And I have to say that it's a privilege to be in the presence of Tom McCord on a planetary science interview. And it's my expectation that he'll tell us some exciting things about the asteroids and the very last asteroid that we're going to visit, in particular Ceres, which may contain something very wonderful to discover. The Dawn spacecraft is an SUV-sized spacecraft that uses a very unique propulsion system. It's an ion propulsion system that enables the spacecraft to travel out and visit two previously unexplored worlds, Vesta and Ceres, which are large asteroids, one of which is a dwarf planet in the main asteroid belt between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter.
In an earlier time, might it have been dubbed a planet the way Pluto was?
We'll have to ask Tom that, but go ahead.
Yes, this is a class of objects that is Vesta and Ceres, and the third one, Pallas, that we will not be visiting. These are not really asteroids. These are small planets in that they have experienced planetary processes, melting and differentiation and so forth. So it's really a different class than asteroids and more like planets. This definition of what is a planet and what isn't has sort of gotten muddled in, you might think, solid science politics. So different people have different opinions. But to me, they're small planets.
Mm-hmm. And it suggests that a lot of planets were forming, not just the ones that we have known over the years when our system was developing. Is it important to see these to understand anything about all the other ones?
Oh, for sure. There probably were many more of these small planets. They went to make the Earth and Mars and the terrestrial planets. They were the building blocks. So studying the very few that are left gives us insight into how our own planet and those in the inner solar system were formed.
What kind of equipment is on this Dawn probe?
I think I can speak to that. There,
sure, go ahead, Tom.
Science payload consists of three different instruments. One was supplied by the U.S., and two were supplied by our foreign partners, Germany and Italy. And the Germans have provided a framing camera, which will take pictures of the surface of the minor planets. And Italy is going to provide a mapping spectrometer, or has provided a mapping spectrometer, which will tell us about the mineralogy of the surface of the asteroids. And in my case, I'm the principal investigator for an instrument called GRAND, Gamma Ray and Neutron Detector, that will tell us about the elemental composition of the surface of the planets. And the three bits of information will help us understand how these planets formed and evolved.
Would it be surprising if they were any different from what we find on the other planets?
Well,
is it likely, in fact?
The
minerals,
know, the whole solar system is formed from the same elements that are in the sun. So that won't surprise us. We won't find some new unknown material. But what is important is which minerals are there, because this tells us more about the temperature and pressure and the processes operating in these objects and how they actually form. The payload is directed at this. You'll notice that it's very much about what the minerals are and what the elements are on the surface, because that tells us about the chemistry, the thermodynamic history.
Now, Go ahead.
Dawn is a mission in space and time, and part of the message that we want to deliver is that we're going out to this main asteroid belt region, which is thought to be a region that started to form and then into a planet, and then the formation was halted by the formation nearby of a large planet called Jupiter. And as such, you're looking at these bodies and their planetary embryos. And there are two different types of planets we're going to look at. One's dry and differentiated, and it formed closer to the sun, and the other was thought to have been formed by aqueous processing, water processes, and it was formed further away. And one of the things that we would like to do by visiting these objects is form a connection between the meteorites that we have in hand for Vesta and what we see on Vesta's surface. If you look at the meteorites, you can tell a lot about what's going on, including when the parent body was formed. And if you can establish context between the meteorites we have in hand on Earth and Vesta, for example, then you can learn a lot about the processes that went into forming Vesta.
So they were formed in separate parts of the solar system but wound up in the same general area?
Well, they formed relatively close together, we believe. They're very different objects. Vesta has been heated much more, and the water that was around in the beginning was driven off, while Ceres still retains its water. And we think the key factor there is that Vesta was formed a little earlier in time, only by a couple of million years, perhaps, than Ceres. And there was, at the beginning of the solar system, what we call short-lived radioactivity, radioactive elements that decayed rather rapidly. And they produced a lot of heat, but only for a very short period of time. So if an object condensed a little earlier when there was still more of this short-lived radioactivity, they got much hotter, and so hot that they drove the water off. And we think Vesta was formed just a little earlier than Ceres, and so lost its water, while Ceres retained its water, which gives it a very interesting chemistry history.
When was the Dawn probe launched?
It was the 27th of September, in the morning, at dawn.
This
a beautiful launch.
And you were there, obviously.
Yes, I was. And I remember the night before watching the gantry move back from the rocket and thinking, this is really going to happen. And in the morning, it did. And it launched on a Delta II and went off into the sky and headed towards the rising sun.
So it's just 4 months in on its mission. Where is it now?
Well, we're in the middle we've started thrusting with our ion propulsion system, and so we're slowly spiraling out from Earth's orbit, and we're going to thrust continuously, and then every now and then we'll coast a bit, and eventually we're going to get to Mars, and at Mars we're going to fly very close to Mars and do an adjustment in the trajectory of the spacecraft so that we're in the orbital plane of Vesta. And that happens in 2009. And then we're going to arrive about 2.5 years later at Vesta in October of 2011. And we're going to spend as much as 9 months at Vesta doing science and orbiting Vesta. And then we're going to leave. And about, just about 3 years later, we'll get to Ceres in February of 2015, and we'll orbit Ceres and do science there for 5 months or longer.
So we have to be patient here. But
In fact, there's a key thing about that. If this mission was done with conventional propulsion system, chemical propellant, we're talking about a $2 billion mission. The type of propulsion that Dawn uses, while it's very slow, it really only costs half, $1 billion to do the mission. And it's also very forgiving. If you're coasting along and you don't have your iron propulsion system, you have a little bit of time to make adjustments and get things working again. And so it's a very forgiving system, very reliable. This is the first time this type of propulsion has been used for a space mission, and it's very exciting.
There's another attractive factor, and that is that we should be able to continue on doing research even after Ceres. The end of the mission, the date for the end of the mission, is really artificial and has more to do with money budgeted than it does technology or life of the spacecraft.
Now, I can't remember which one of you said he was amazed that it was happening on the eve of the launch. Did you have any doubts that it would happen? I know there was a point when NASA canceled this mission.
No, I think that it was clear as the gantry was moving back that, barring weather, we were going to launch. And so we were pretty excited at that point.
These launches, though, are iffy. I've been through, I don't know, 5-6 of them now. And they almost always are delayed for weather reasons, for equipment failure and what have you, and it's always a fingernail biting exercise until it finally launches.
My guests are two Dr. Tom Prettyman and Dr. Tom McCord. We're talking about the Dawn space probe that is now nearing Mars, but should reach its two objects that it is supposed to examine somewhere in the next 5 to 8 years. And how does something like this even happen? I'm sure a lot of scientists have different ideas of what we should be looking at. Somebody says, how about looking at Ceres and Vesta? And then somebody says, okay, well, we got $500 million. Let's work this out.
Not that easy.
Maybe we could call up the Italians and get them interested?
Not that easy. We started planning this thing, 15 years ago, and it was different at that point. And what one does is one has an idea of a mission that would make scientific sense. And there are some programs within NASA that accept proposals for these sorts of things. And so you start out proposing, and it's a big effort to put one of these proposals together. In this case, we proposed, 3 different times or 4 different times, each time being rejected, but getting some better idea of what might be accepted. So the mission concept morphed over time to what you see now. And finally, it was accepted. With all the practice, we got so good they couldn't turn us down.
Yeah, and then there are plenty of struggles getting everything built, assembled on the spacecraft, and all the way through launch. But it was well worth every minute of the struggle.
Oh, for sure. This is one of the most exciting missions I've been on.
Well, we talked in a previous segment about other kinds of struggles at the Jet Propulsion Lab. Is this something that either of you has had to deal with?
Oh, I'm.
Are you willing to talk about it?
No, I'm Tom McCord. I'm a consultant here. Been working with Caltech and JPL for 35 years. It has not affected me. A number of people have become legitimately concerned about the situation. I sort of will let it happen as it happens, and try to stay out of the way.
Are there other space programs of this sort happening in other countries, or is the United States pretty much doing this
alone?
Oh,
no, Europe is quite active. We've just had a series of lunar missions with Japan, and India will launch its lunar mission here this coming spring. It's become a very much an international activity. partly for technology development, partly for national pride. It's very much international. The United States was, of course, the big at the beginning. Even Russia, formerly Soviet Union, is still active.
He said partly for technology development. In other words, other things come out of the development of the equipment necessary to do this sort of thing?
Oh, for sure. It's stressing technology. That's one of the requirements for NASA to accept a mission is that it stresses the technology in some dimension or other.
I thought it was only that Tang would be developed as a result of this. Well, actually,
it's
this
a little
is,
more rich than that.
This would be impossible with humans involved, wouldn't it?
Well, I can't comment on that. Maybe one of the things to mention is some of the excitement that might come from this mission is the visit to Ceres, which is somewhat enigmatic. We don't have any meteorites from Ceres, and some have put together models that suggest that perhaps Ceres may harbor a subterranean ocean, much like Europa.
Hmm.
And if that was true, it'd be very exciting. And Dawn may be, because, you know, Ceres is easy to reach compared to Europa. It's not, you know, as far away, and it's in a more pleasant radiation environment. You can imagine missions following Dawn that might want to visit this dwarf planet that's closest to the sun. Whether that would involve humans at some point is unknown.
I asked you earlier about the mission being canceled in 2006. Was that because of money considerations?
A lot of people have different opinions about why that happened. One would have to get inside the head of some people at NASA headquarters to fully understand that.
Right. I would concur with that.
Well, we'll leave it on that enigmatic note. By the way, we have a link to NASA's Dawn mission website posted on our show page at WNYC. You can go there to find out more about the Dawn probe and also see photos. And it has been my great honor to talk to two of the scientists involved, two of the most important scientists in the field, Dr. Thomas Prettyman, a member of the Dawn Science team and a planetary scientist at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, and also Dr. Thomas McCord, a member of the Dawn team at Caltech. Thank you so much. Or in Washington State, right? On tomorrow's show, we track the journey of human waste from the toilet to the treatment plants, also what the future of waste management looks like. Atul Gawande will talk about a doctor's ethical concerns. Then two stars of the new production of George Bernard Shaw's play, The Devil's Disciple, will be here. And Please Explain will be about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Nee Schick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Rory Bernstein, Julia Corcoran, John Cottrell, and Stephen Valentino. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.